Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus.
Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Patti Smyth, amazing singer from Scandal, of course, and many other places, is on as well. And legendary sportscaster Jim Gray coming up also to tell some interesting stories of days of yore. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. Certain behavior makes you more vulnerable to identity theft, like using the same password on every account and oversharing personal information on social media. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. We put our info at risk on the internet. You could miss certain threats by just monitoring your credit alone. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. Protect yourself. If they detect your information, they'll send you an alert, but they probably won't because you'll have LifeLock and you'll have world-class protection. Right, Dawson?
No, we prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can find out if your information is on the dark web. Get your free dark web scan at LifeLock.com/scan. Pick the plan that's right for you and save up to 25% off your first year with promo code Adam. It's a free scan at LifeLock.com/scan and 25% off with promo code Adam.
And also a tip of the cap to our good friends over at Geico. How do you banish high rates on car insurance? Switch to Geico during Geicoween. That's the time we're living in. Folks at Geico have been working even harder to cast out high rates and craft just the right policy for you and your family. Switch to Geico. It's not scary, especially when they could brew up spellbinding savings just for you. So get a quote today at geico.com and see just how much you could be saving. No eye of newt needed, just happy Geicoween to everyone.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show. The new album from Patti Smyth, It's About Time, is out today. Here's the first single, Drive, on the Adam Carolla Show.
Of us when we were kids. We're out in a field behind where we used to live. I'm chasing you, chasing him in a faraway dream. We're running in grass that's so tall we can barely be seen.
That is Patti Smyth. It's About Time is the name of the album. It's available everywhere you get music tomorrow as you hear this. Good to see you. Good to meet you.
You too.
I just want to make sure I'm doing the Smyth right versus the Smith.
Yes. We're crying out loud.
Good.
You think people had figured that out by now, but I guess not.
Well, we figured it out. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
So thanks for joining us. I got to tell you, one of my favorite Scandal songs is not one of the hits that most people may know or got a lot of spins on the radio. And we'll get to some of our favorite Patti Smyth songs as the interview wears on. Where are you at right now? Where do you reside?
We live in New York, but I'm in Malibu right now. I'm in California. We've been here for most of the quarantine. Yeah.
God, that seems to be, let's see, you, Kevin Bacon, and Rob Lowe, and Sean Penn seem to be.
Is Kevin Bacon out here?
Oh, yeah. Kevin,
I know Sean is. I see Sean around, but I haven't seen any. I haven't no sightings of Kevin Bacon. But do they have? I didn't know even if they have a house out here. Maybe they rented a place out here.
I may be insane, but I interviewed all those gentlemen over the last several months, and I'm pretty sure Kevin Bacon was in.
I'm going to hunt him down.
Quarantine there as well. So. Patti, I guess we should start because it's super topical about you being asked to join and go out on tour with Van Halen back in the day. Can you talk about that?
Oh my God. Hold on. I can talk about that. I can talk about that. But my husband's about to
on that roof.
Walk in. Okay. So I'm into my shot. So I just moved.
Patti just got up and moved.
I just got up and moved. I'm sorry. But
that's all right.
Walk through again. He's doing it to me all day long. This is what it's like to be in quarantine with your husband. Okay. We're both doing, he's doing the French Open but I don't walk through his shots, but he walks through mine.
Oh.
So I'm making him go up around the house. I should have showed you what I just did. There he goes. So Van Halen asked me to join, Eddie asked me to join Van Halen in 1984. Well, I guess it was 1985 because I was 8 months pregnant with my daughter, Ruby. And it just was, we had been, you know, hanging out and they came out, him and Valerie came on the road with Scandal and we had a blast, but it just was bad timing. You know, I was a diehard New Yorker and I'm like, I'm not moving to LA. I'm not going to, you know, and they fought a lot, him and his brother, Alex. They love each other, but they always had sort of a volatile thing going. So I sort of flippantly was like, no, I don't think so. I think you should find somebody else. And he found Sammy, who was great. And I regretted it for a couple of years there. I definitely was like, what the hell? And then, it works out the way it's supposed to work out. I wound up writing Sometimes Love and No Mistakes and a lot of songs that I would not have written as a member of Van Halen, probably. But I wish that I had gotten to do a record at least. If he had said, let's make a record, I think I might have said yes to that.
Well, so let's explore. By the way, your husband's John McEnroe, right?
Yeah, I just kicked him out. Yeah.
All right. I was in the back of my head somewhere. I was thinking, wait a minute. Patti's married to John McEnroe. I remember that story. But
I know not everybody knows that. I tried to keep it on the down low for a long time. I believe that may be the secret to our success.
Yes.
Was not hoeing him down at every corner.
It's at the very bottom of my bio on you. I would have moved it up a couple of spots. let's see. But go past orange is her favorite color. I'd put it in front of her parents drove a Pontiac in the mid-60s. I'd also go ahead and push that ahead.
She had a Mustang convertible, no Pontiac.
Sorry. Chili Dog is her favorite dog. All right, I'd put it above that. Married to John McEnroe. Yes. Did you guys know that?
Yes.
Oh, you did? See, I have a theory that not everybody knows. I think more people know now.
I saw him reference it on the air on something ESPN or so, you know, years ago. Right. And I was like, oh, no kidding. That was the first time I'd heard of it. This was 10 years ago.
Teresa, were you aware of this information?
I was. I wrote for a game show and John McEnroe was the host. So I may have,
The chair?
Yep. Yeah. The chair. Yeah. And I know they have two daughters.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how they met and I've been curious.
We met through a mutual friend at a party in Malibu, weirdly, on Christmas Day. That was how we met. Because the producer, Roy Bittan, it wasn't love at first sight. It was like at first sight because but I had just gotten out of a relationship and he was like a year into the separation. So it wasn't like good timing that first time. And then I saw him again 9 months later, and then it was like, boom.
What's
up? That was it.
So let's go back to Valerie Bertinelli and Eddie Van Halen going, seeing some scandal shows or going out with you guys, or how did that
Valerie
work?
Valerie was a fan and she dragged Ed to one of our shows, and he must have had his guitar with him, and we got on like a house on fire, and then they just jumped on the tour bus. You know, we were in LA, they played at the Palladium with us out here. And then they just got on the tour bus and they came out on the road with us for like 3 days, which was amazing.
They meaning Van Halen came out with you?
No, Valerie and Eddie.
Oh, okay.
Just Eddie. We were dueling headlining with John Waite and poor John Waite. You know, there were three shows where like I had the secret weapon of Eddie Van Halen in my band. So that kind of gave me a slight edge those evenings.
So is Eddie Van Halen, when Eddie Van Halen says, yeah, I'll go out and just sort of play around with you guys, is he sitting in playing around on Scandal songs? Are you guys covering other stuff? How's that work?
No, he really liked Maybe We Went Too Far, which was the last record, the last song on that Warrior album. And that was one of his favorite songs. So we played that. He liked Beat of a Heart. He played on Goodbye to You. I mean, you can go online and find the Palladium, God bless him, recorded those that evening. So there was like six or seven songs of him just, you know, wailing on all of our Scandal songs, which is pretty cool.
Would he need to, once he knew the song, could he just go out there and sort of freeform it? He didn't have to sort of work it out, or did he?
I think he probably worked some stuff out, probably backstage before we went on for a couple of songs. I think he knew, you know, he was really pretty musically gifted, let's face it. So I'm sure he had to listen to it a couple of times and was able to play, but he might have run over some stuff with the other guitar player. I don't know, but not really.
So he got to hear you play. He got to hear you sing live. Like, he got to hear you perform.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
Meanwhile, your lead guitarist is being cuckolded by Eddie Van Halen, who was coming out there. But
exactly.
Well, let's face it, it's a nightmare for Eddie Van Halen to walk out after you when you walk out with your playing the lead licks on a song. But the ultimate compliment, and it's so organic, which is Eddie Van Halen is not listening to Scandal, because I don't know, Eddie Van Halen is probably into something a little deeper and a little less pop, but his wife says, oh no, they're good, and then he goes, and then he sees you perform live, which is a real deal type situation, and then he says, at some point, would you like to join us? I mean, I don't know, there's no bigger tip of the cap than that, especially since you're sort of hopping from one gender to the next gender, meaning a female leading a male-led rock and roll band that's legendary at that point.
I mean, the truth is I take umbrage at, like, deeper, because I'm not sure that, like, Van Halen had deeper songs than Scandal, lyrically anyway.
I don't mean deeper. I mean heavier or something.
Wait, you could dissect Hot for Teacher.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, true. Hot for Teacher is pretty good. Not super deep, but I mean, but, you know, I love Van Halen. I love those songs, but I didn't really turn into a huge Van Halen fan until he played on Thriller. So that solo with Michael Jackson, when I was like, oh my God, that was like unbelievable. So Eddie was a super smart guy. And I think that it was really ballsy of him to even consider putting a chick in there. He wanted to do something different. The music, the rock and roll has been historically sexist. It still is, but it was brutal back then. So, you know, on some, you know, when I thought, again, it was just timing. You know, I just was not in the right hormonal headspace to say yes to that. But I would have really, I it wasn't because I didn't think I could do it. I totally thought I could do it. I just didn't want to move to California. You know, it's like dumb, but true. And I really loved him and Val, and, you know, and I was a little bit worried about, like, how his brother would take it. You know, you know, that was Eddie's idea. I don't know how his brother and the bass player felt about it.
Yeah, oftentimes brothers in rock bands don't work out really well emotionally.
Don't wait for Oasis to get back together.
Yeah.
Between Oasis and the Kinks, right? I mean, Lord.
Yeah, the Kinks famously as well. So how did you, how did Scandal come about for you?
Such an old story. I mean, I just, this guy, Zach Smith, was looking for a singer in a band, and he called a payphone at a steakhouse that I was waitressing at. You know, I was singing on the weekends at comedy clubs, and I was waitressing at the steakhouse, and I answered the phone, and he asked me to come meet with him, and I met with him, and then he kind of wanted me to audition for him. I was like, I'm not auditioning for you. I don't even know who you are. And he's like, well, will you come and sing on these demos for me tomorrow night? I was like, yeah, but my mom's coming in for dinner, so she's coming too. And that's literally how it happened. I sang on Love's Got a Line on You, and I can't remember a couple of the other songs. And we just put a band together and, like, you know, started playing at the Ritz, and we got signed pretty quickly. You know, I've been doing gigs and different iterations all around New York, but that particular combo worked.
I love Love's Got a Line on You. That's one of my favorite.
Thank you. We did a video of that. You know, that's how we got signed. Like, that was another. Zach was very smart. He's like, let's do a video. I know a fashion photographer. So that we paid $500 for that video, Line on You. Mm-hmm. We did the same thing with Goodbye to You.
Yeah. Let's hear it for a second. I haven't heard it in a long time. It's just a great pop song.
Definitely not heavy.
No. But good. All right. Yeah. I love female leads or female bands in 80s pop stuff. It's always been my favorite. I have some Go-Go songs that are like deeper cut Go-Go songs. Go-Go's have a lot of really good songs. Their hits are a little less as good as some of the deep stuff. And, I've always just sort of had that. I don't know why. I'm not sure why the female for me works better in that genre than the male. I guess you can kind of think about them. I guess you could sort of fantasize about them or something. I don't know.
Maybe that was it. I don't think about male or female with music. I think about if I like it or not. You know, I used to be asked that all the time. Who's your favorite female? I'm like, I never thought of that. It was just whatever I dug. You know, I don't think I was heavy on female vocalists. You know, I mean, I had some, but obviously in the rock and roll world, there weren't many to choose from. I had like three. And the rest were dudes. So I don't really think about it. But I think the Go-Go's wrote some great songs. And that first record was like incredible. Every cut on that record was great.
I agree. And the ones that got a lot of spins on the radio, to me, weren't as good as some of the ones that got a lot less spins. I read somewhere that you had covered Downtown Train. I think by, we're talking about Tom Waits.
Yeah.
Earlier. I always love that song, and I knew the Rod Stewart version of it. I was at first confused because I was like, this is a really good song. It couldn't have been Rod Stewart that wrote this song because he writes Hot Legs, and Do You Think I'm Sexy and all that kind of stuff. And I hate a lot of his stuff, but I loved. But this song was smart and interesting. And you did it, about 3 years before Rod did?
I did it 2 years before him, and then he did it, and then I just re-recorded it again for this record because I didn't really like the production on the 87 version. I never did. I never played it live because of that. I couldn't stand the way it sounded with my band playing it, so I just finally stripped it down to just guitar and me, and that's how I recorded it for this record.
Oh, really? So we should find that version of it.
Don't you have my record there?
I don't know. I'm looking at my
engineer. You're playing my old songs. You got to be playing my new songs too. Not there's nothing wrong with my old songs, but
this is the new
version. I love Drive, which we heard.
Thank you.
Outside another yellow moon, punched a hole in the nighttime. Yeah, I climbed through the window and down to the street. I'm shining like a new dime. The downtown trains are filled with all those Brooklyn girls. They try so hard to break out of their little worlds. You wave your hands and they scatter like crows. They have nothing that'll ever capture your heart. They're just
so,
thorns without
sorry,
the
bring
road.
It down, Dawson, a little. You didn't like your original version of that song.
No,
the
I
whole
did
time.
Not. Nope.
Did you know it at the time that you didn't like it?
When it was done, I did. You know, like I was trying to, you fight with your producers. I had two producers on that record. I had a 6-week-old baby. And I was fighting the mix on that. But you know what I mean? It's like I lost the battle on that mix. There just was too much shit on that track. It just, to me, it overpowered the song. And I was right. Because there was no reason for Rod Stewart to have a hit with that and not me.
So
I believe that's why. If you listen to the Rod Stewart version, it's just pretty, it's much more simple and straight ahead.
Yeah.
I think so. But, you know, I just wanted, you know, for me, it's like it's been a long time since I put out a new record. I was just making an EP and then I thought, I'm going to put this one on. This is the way I want to cut it right now. And so I did it. I liked it so much I cut it twice.
I love the song. And
is that like a pot of chili next to you? Are you cooking?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
No, it's my Yeti. I got dry mouth.
Oh, okay. Got it. It literally looked like a pot of chili. Okay.
I guess from that angle, it does. I should stir it up a little bit. can I ask a question real quick? Mm-hmm. I feel a little gun-shy now going back to your old stuff, but I just have to ask because it's one of my favorite songs, not just of yours, but it's one of my favorite songs. You referenced it earlier, Sometimes Love Just Ain't Enough. Fantastic song. I love the duet with you and Don Henley, the two of the best voices of that era coming together for this great song. Specific questions, you know, tangentially related. I've watched the video a few times over the years, and I always wondered, was Don Henley on set for 20 minutes? It doesn't feel like you got a ton of Don Henley. Now, it's your song, so of course you can do whatever you want, but was he like, you got 30 minutes and that's it, I'm out of here?
No. You know, the truth is I played him that song when I first wrote it. I called him on the phone, like, you know, us dinosaurs did, and I sang it for him over the phone. And I was like, there's a great harmony on the chorus. Will you sing it? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. Because I had sung a bunch of background on his records. So, you know, he was returning the favor. It was not supposed to be a duet. It was not written as a duet, nor did I want it to be a duet, really. But when Roy Bittan got him in the studio, and by the way, you know, Don Henley cut that three versions of that with me. Okay. Huh? That's the kind of friend he is. So he definitely had time invested in that song. So Roy Bittan was like, how about he sings like some of the verse and how about he sings some of the B section? And I was like, it was hard to argue with it. It sounded amazing when he did. So I was like, okay, you know, like it was a spontaneous duet. It was not supposed to be that. He was just supposed to sing the background. So then he came and did the video with me and he didn't like the way he looked in the video. Like he didn't like the way it was shot. And so I reshot him for it. So he spent time there. It just was like, you know, it's just, you know, videos were goofy back in the day in a way. Like he just appears in the doorway. But he had been hanging with me and you know, wanted to get it right. He's cool. A hard worker. So, yeah. But that was funny. It does look like he was there for 5 minutes. And
it looks like he called his own out.
It's interesting getting the behind the scenes to these stories. I mean, it's interesting that, I don't know how many times someone writes a song that's not supposed to be a duet and then becomes a duet when they record it. It's also got to be a weird position for the producer to be in to go pitch. It should be a duet to the person who wrote the song. That it seems uncomfortable. Seems like an uncomfortable. I mean, intuitively, it's a strong decision, but it seems like a difficult conversation to have that could be taken as insulting.
I don't think that he would have ever thought that up if it wasn't Don Henley. I mean, we're talking about Don Henley now, you know. So, like, he would have been happy if he sang the whole song with me. You know, we could have sang from beginning to end in harmony, and that would have been fine with him because we do have a really good sound together. So it wasn't like, you know, that difficult a thing. It was like Henley sounded so good that he wanted to hear more of him and more of him. And I was totally open to that. I would not have been open to probably anyone else. And I've said that over the years. I don't know that I would ever do a duet with anyone else. Maybe a girl. I'd like to do a duet with a girl. I think that'd be interesting.
Hey, question I wanted to ask 20 minutes ago, but you know, we move on. John McEnroe, always, you know, famously, sort of notably Mr. Hothead and everything. Is he a teddy bear to live with? Is he a hothead to live with? Is he have that same temperament? Has he mellowed with the years?
Yeah, he's definitely mellowed, but even in the beginning, if you had asked him and I together who had the hotter head, it would be me. I'm definitely have a way worse temper. The kids are more afraid of me than him. So I win that hands down. He may have yelled at a few umpires, but I've actually, you know, punched a couple people in the face. So I think he loses as far as like hot tempered. And he's definitely mellow. He's you know, he gets pissed off at traffic now. That's what I like to say. That's the only thing that infuriates him. And it's great when you see him go off on traffic because he's like, he loses his shit completely. You know, if we're like 5 minutes late or whatever, that's where he loses it. It's like, you know, he'll still lose it on the court, I guess, but he's not playing that much tennis right now. Not that I really punch people in the face, but he's literally holding me back a lot from, like, I like to yell at people who are taking us their pictures of us while we're having dinner or whatever. So he's more laid back now.
Is that an issue? You two going out and paparazzi and folks at restaurants wanting autographs, you know, and that kind of stuff?
It's not like, you know, it used to be way more of an issue, you know, 25 years ago. We've been together a long time. You know, we're older now. People aren't exactly hot on our trail like they were. They have other people that they want to, you know, as far as paparazzi. But people now just think it's okay to walk up to anybody, anytime, anywhere, and ask for a picture, which is mind-blowing to me because I would never do that. But people do it all the time. So, you know, sometimes, I mean, John really hates that. But I mean, sometimes it's appropriate, you know, like when we're at shows or we're at friends' shows. But, you know, a lot of the times it's not appropriate. But yet people, it's like people who walk around talking on the speakerphones everywhere. I mean, what the hell is happening? I don't want to hear your fucking conversation, okay? Never. And I don't want you to take my picture while I'm having dinner with my kids. I mean, and then they're like, you asshole. I'm like, oh, sorry that I'm not available to you 24/7, but you know.
Yeah, now, maybe.
I must be hungry. You can see. See, I'm a little edgy.
Yeah, it seems every single human being has a phone on them with a camera in it now versus back in the day. Obviously, you couldn't chronicle anything, so you had to get an autograph on a cocktail napkin. Now everyone has a camera and everyone chronicles everything all the time. So if you see someone famous, you do the math.
I know. It's like they don't even think about it. Oh, I'm sorry to bother you. But it's not even that. You know, it's kind of scary because there was a guy who jumped in front of a train in New York. He was holding his kid. The kid survived. No one jumped in to get the kid. Everyone just stood there videotaping it. That's the kind of world we're in now. It's like they want to capture the moment. They don't want to be in the moment. And that's what's sort of freaky about what's happening. You know, like I want to be in the moment. And I was always the one, like all photographs of my family, I'm not in any of them because I was always taking pictures of, you know, the kids and everything like that. But I don't want to ever be a person who is just watching. You know, I'd like to think that I would jump down on that train track and, you know, finally somebody did. But that's the kind of world we're in now. And like people, especially since quarantine too, that's also lifted the veil on, you know, what is appropriate and what isn't. You know, people are losing touch with how to, you know, move socially, you know, and interact socially. It's a strange time.
I wonder if looking at everything through a monitor is partially responsible for us kind of losing a connection in terms of, is it happening? Is it really happening? So like if you're looking at a concert and it always drives me nuts when people film concerts or film events. So it's 100%. Like if you're there, you're there. If you have your phone up and you're looking at it on your phone, then you're looking at it on your phone, and then you could be anywhere. You could be in a aforementioned library or postal sorting hub in Arleta staring at the exact same thing. And this notion of I'm going to go back and enjoy this, I don't know. I'll file that under wedding videos. I don't know. Does anyone, everyone chronicles every second of their wedding. Do you ever go back and look at those? And if you do, it's after you've been served with divorce papers and you're thinking about killing yourself. That is the only scenario.
But wait. The truth is what these freaking people do, because sometimes they just stop. Like I'll stop in the middle of a song. I'm like, come on, you know, it sounds good right here and now. It's going to sound like shit later on your phone, because your phone isn't really set up to record, you know, us live. But then what happens is there's like hundreds of like shitty videos of me singing live because, you know, they bad angle. There's people talking wherever they were next to the speaker. So what people do with that is they post it because they just want to get home and post shit. But a lot of times I'm just like, look, let's just be here now. Like put the phone down and just enjoy it now, because it isn't going to be good later. It's good now. But sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't.
It's like they're trying to prove they're alive. Like they film it and go post it and go, look at everybody, I'm alive.
I know there's a weird thing going on now. Yeah, some good things is going to come from this quarantine, because people are now getting into being home and enjoying being home. And maybe we'll get less frantic to get that Instagram moment, you know, and just like live our life. Like we don't have to prove to everyone how great our fucking life is, you know. Just live it.
Yeah, I concur, and I sort of feel that way. We're so digital that you have to kind of go analog every once in a while. Like I don't have food delivered to my house. If I order food, I'll just walk to the place and go get it and then just walk it home, just to keep it a little analog, just because it feels. I'm also that way with stuff. Like everyone like has a note and goes, instead of taking the note, you know, instead of writing it down, just take a picture of it and then use your phone when you're at the hardware store. And I'm always like, I just want to write it down and have a list. It just, it feels, I don't know, it feels necessary or important. And I'm just old and I don't know technology very well, but there's something about the analog world that, even though it feels like the past, and even though it feels a little time consuming and not as efficient, you got to live there a little bit. Like you have to drive your own car.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I like to write, you know, when I write songs and I write music, I write with a pen and paper. You know, I write with a lot of people who just do it on the computer, but I don't like to do that. I like to scribble shit out and rewrite lines and put tuck words in and give three variations on what that word could be. So my writing tablets are a mess. So that's where I use pen and paper for sure. But I write down ideas in my phone, because a lot of times I don't have pen and paper. So I go into my notes and I write down, if I get an idea, you know, out in the world, I'll write it there.
I think there's something to physically, I do the same way. Like I just always have all my little note scraps with show ideas, and I want to talk about this, and I draw arrows to that. And I think beyond just capturing an idea, the writing it down is a process that actually creates more ideas, like versus dictating it to somebody or typing it out. There's something about the process of long-handing it and sort of looking at it, and sometimes even underlining it or drawing an arrow to something else that kind of gets the juices flowing.
I agree with that, but I wonder if my kids agree with that. They probably are so used to, you know, typing it down, and, you know, they've been typing since they're 6 years old. So, you know, they're probably are able to type as fast as they think and come up with whatever they need to do. You know, they're doing all their grammar. My grammar's gone out the window. It's terrible. My punctuation is like Did I even go to school?
I don't even. And by the way, who?
I can't remember. I used to be a great speller. I'm like, John is a much better speller than me. I'm like, I can't spell shit anymore. It's sick.
S-H-I-T. All right, let me hit Red Cap here. Comfort done right, making workwear and uniforms since 1923 for the essential workers, making our communities thrive. Clothing for many industries, automotive, culinary, manufacturing, waste management, oil block coveralls, Resista engine fluids. Oil just beads right off. It just rolls right off. They got their latest project for Road Heroes, the truckers, the trucker tab. A $50,000 tab at Cracker Barrel to feed our long-haul truckers, and you can check it out at truckertab.com. These people keep this country fed and supplied and on its feet, so please help if you can. And you can donate, too. I just did. Go to truckertab.com. That is truckertab.com. Red Cap, workwear done right. So any plans when the pandemic goes away one day, God willing, touring, playing, Scandal, oh, yeah. Reunions?
That's going to be a little bit difficult, I have a feeling. I mean, I would love to do that. But let's face it, me and the entire Sioux Nation are going to be like hitting the road. OK, like everyone and everybody. It's going to be a bottleneck like you've never seen. I don't even know how they're going to do it. They're going to have to do like three different concerts tonight at venues when they open, because there's so many backed up tours. It's crazy. So it'll be interesting. I, you know, I can't wait to get out and play live, but it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. I mean, there's only certain, you know, so many nights at the Garden where it's not like an NBA game or whatever, or a hockey game. It'll be interesting to see.
Did you have a tour schedule that was impacted, cut short?
I didn't because I was like on an 80s tour. I think I might have had a couple of dates, but no, because we were focusing on launching the record, and then we were supposed to start booking dates, you know, like March and April, and you know, for the summer and the fall. So that didn't quite happen. But I know a lot of people who did have tours that were canceled. I know a lot of musicians who are hurting right now. So I hope we get back to that soon.
I wonder how many of those venues, I'm not talking about the Garden, but I'm just talking about the smaller venues are going to be around.
They're not going to survive. Yeah.
They're not. Yeah, because, a lot of places got creative and moved it on out to the sidewalk, you know, barber shops and salons and restaurants, and everyone's got the parking lot thing, and it's fenced off, and they put a little shrub there and everything. But how do you do that with music clubs and comedy clubs? How could you possibly do that?
I don't know. We were trying to do something live from the Roxy where we were going to do it in the parking lot, but then they wouldn't let us do that. Now you could probably do a show, but you could only live stream it. You can't have an audience unless you do a drive-in or something like that.
Oh, Adam, this is your answer to the what to do with the post office and the libraries. Forget about those. They're funded. Go with the comedy clubs and music venues.
I know. Exactly. I know. They're neither fish nor fowl. Like, they don't fall. All they are is clothes. Like, there's really nothing. There's nothing they can do about it. Like I said, a lot of the comedy clubs out here have been completely dormant, just shuttered for 6-7 months now. They were going to try to, the Comedy Store is going to try to do something in the parking lot, and the LA City put the kibosh on going out in the parking lot and doing it, which I don't get, because cafes and restaurants are open in the parking lot. What's the difference? Evidently there is,
I guess, a PA system and noise and stuff like that. I don't know, but it's definitely crazy how many businesses are going to go under now. I mean, I guess we needed a reset. I guess we needed some sweeping thing. I'd like to think there was a reason behind this madness, but there'll be some good that comes of it, but it's going to be hard for a while. But I think we're going to, you know, it'll get better, and New York is always going to survive and come back better than ever. But it's, you know, we need every town to come back better than ever, not just New York. That's for sure.
Do your kids play tennis? Do they have that gene?
No. They played tennis in high school and college. No.
They like do they tennis. Play music?
They all jam. They all like to jam. Yeah. but they don't play music. My daughters are becoming criminal justice reform lawyers. One's in law school, one's a senior. The two girls I have with John, and my oldest daughter is a teacher. Wow. So one of my kids, my stepdaughter is into acting. My stepson's a writer. And then my other stepson is a healer. Don't ask. Don't ask, don't tell about psychic healers.
Well, it probably is something that is embraced more by strangers than by parents.
Definitely. And being in Arizona helps too.
Oh, yeah. I got to put a pin in this bad boy. I'd like, since if you're in town and the quarantine's lifted, come see us in person and maybe play a little.
Are you in New York? Are you in New York now?
I'm in L.A.
Okay.
We're in L.A., but I actually have just got a place in Malibu, so maybe we're neighbors. I don't know.
Yeah.
I
let the world know that, but I actually have to jump off because I am building, you know, renovating a house, and I've got to go meet these guys up the hill now.
I wish we'd talked about that an hour ago, because that is my greatest passion. I'm an insane builder person guy who would love to talk about that. So hopefully
you can contact me through my publicist and I'd be happy to, you know, talk to you about it. So they'll hook us up.
Especially if we're
close together out here.
Is the place, have they begun the project?
Oh yeah. It's brutal.
All right. Yes, I will. Cause I'd love to, take walk the property with you. That's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, It's About Time is the name of the new album and new music. It's available tomorrow as you hear this. And first album in 28 years. Website, pattysmytheandscandal.com. Thanks, Patty.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. You take care. Stay well. I'll see you in the boot, okay?
We shall. See you. All right. See you at Duke's in the parking lot.
Never Duke's. Bowie's maybe Bowie or Olo, and Duck Guy, but never Duke's.
I'm writing it down. All right. Thanks, Patty.
All the whites don't go to Duke's, okay?
Yeah, you're right.
You're new. I'll teach you.
Please.
Thanks. Right.
I'll hit you off the air because I'd love to see your project.
All right. Great.
Thanks, Patty.
Take care.
All right. Last but not least, we got Simply Safe here. Most home security companies trap you with high prices, tricky contracts, lousy customer support. There's only one no-brainer. That is Simply Safe. Everything to protect your home, an arsenal of sensors and cameras for every room, window, and door, tailored specifically for your home. Professional monitoring day and night. Ready to send police, fire, or medical professionals. You set it up in under an hour. Peel and stick, and it's done. No drilling, no pulling wires, no muss, no fuss, no fine print, no long-term contracts. Starts at just $15 a month. U.S. News and World Report named it the best overall home security of 2020. It's Simply Safe, right, Dawson?
Head to simplysafe.com/Adam and get a free HD camera for our listeners. That's simplysafe.com/Adam to make sure they know our show sent you.
All right. We're going to bid adieu to Teresa Strasser and Bald Brian. By the way, Teresa's show, The List, and that's a weekend edition. You can check that out on their YouTube page, The List Show TV podcast, easy listening, of course, with our own Gina Grad, Teresa Strasser as well. New episodes every Thursday on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Website, teresastrasser.com. Thank you, my dear. Thank you for
having me.
Bald Brian. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and do All Balls, Jim Gray and Jeff Cesario right after this.
It's time to break down the game film and look at the X's and O's, the KOs and the O-Nos from the world of sports. BetOnline presents All Balls, All Sports.
Well, today in the BetOnline guest chair, world-class sportscaster, he's covered everything and interviewed everybody, 11-time Emmy winner, who has a new book out November 10th called Talking to Goats, Jim Gray. Jim, how are you?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you today?
Good. You look fantastic.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that. So you like your hat.
Thank you very much. Go Dodgers.
There you go. They're going pretty well so far.
Knock on wood. That's there right here.
So Jim, the forward is written by Tom Brady. It's coming out November 10th. Let's talk. What GOATs, greatest of all time, did we cover in the book?
We covered the ones that I covered throughout the course of my career. Ali and traveling with him and being a part of that. The latter stages of his career. The first interview I ever did was with Muhammad Ali. So that was one of them. Mike Tyson, Michael Phelps, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods. Did one of the first interviews that Tiger Woods ever did. I've been on the radio the past decade with Tom Brady. So he's in there. The Dream Team, Chuck Daly was my best friend. So had really unique perspective and access to that. LeBron James and The Decision. So there's been quite a few.
What was your first interview with Muhammad Ali? What year was that?
1978.
So he was heavyweight champ then, right? He was
heavyweight champ, and it was just before he had fought and lost to Spinks, and then they had the rematch the same year. But at that time, he was not only promoting that fight, but he was going to come to Denver to fight a Denver Bronco by the name of Lyle Alzado in an exhibition, which did take place at Mile High Stadium.
I remember that.
The thing that was interesting about the Lyle Alzado fight is Lyle took it very seriously, seemed to train pretty hard for it, and seemed to acquit himself pretty nicely considering he was fighting Muhammad Ali. Like, it was not a joke to him.
Adam, he did very well, and he made all of Denver proud and professional football proud, but Ali was toying with him and playing around, obviously. He was the heavyweight champion and had been a champion for a long, long time. And it wasn't a serious thing for Ali. It was an exhibition. And, Wilt Chamberlain had wanted to, they had talked about possibly having an exhibition. He had gone into the ring with Isao Aoki, who was the, not Isao Aoki. Aoki, confusing him with the guy who double hit the ball, in the, US Open, against Jack Nicklaus. But, he kicked him and he was on his legs the whole time, and he would cause tremendous blood clots in Muhammad Ali's legs. So Ali had learned from that exhibition that you have to take it seriously enough not to get hurt, because that was a setback to him. But he didn't take it seriously in terms of thinking that Alzado could win the fight.
Yeah, there's footage of it, and like I said, like Alzado looked pretty determined. Of course, you're mixing and matching your sports, but Alzado probably took everything very seriously, judging from him.
Well, Alzado was from Yankton College in South Dakota, so he had defied all the odds by becoming a Denver Bronco and by getting into the NFL. And it was before, the Denver Broncos had the Orange Crush at that time, and they went to a Super Bowl with Red Miller. And so, he was huge, huge guy in Denver. And it was before his Raider days where, he was obviously played with the Super Bowl champion team with the Raiders. And it was before the time where he was really known for a lot of the outlandish behavior. But he was certainly known as a great character and a great Denver Bronco. And I think he wanted to get in there and kind of show Ali he was going to whip him, and that football players were tougher than boxers. But obviously that wasn't the case.
Did they, when they did that fight, did they score rounds, or was it just all exhibition?
It was an exhibition. I don't believe they scored rounds, but, it was important for Alzado to try and land some punches, and he landed a couple, but nothing that bothered Ali at all. And Ali didn't want to hurt Alzado. There was no headgear being worn in this. I mean, they fought it like it was, an actual fight, but Ali could have hit him at any time, but he was kind to him, tied him up. And
is there too much money in sports now for us to ever do those kinds of stunts anymore?
Probably, and it's probably also the risk of injury.
That's kind of what I mean. Yeah, like yeah.
Why would you risk yourself? I mean, it's one thing for Tiger Woods to go out and play an exhibition round with Peyton Manning and Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady, because what's the chances of him getting hurt? He's going to go out and practice and play anyway, and he's not playing, you know, real hard, but he's concentrating. So something like that in a sport where, you know, injury really can't occur, that can go on. But in a contact sport like boxing or MMA or, you know, some type of other sport that would have some kind of, you know, one-on-one basketball, Steph Curry could twist an ankle or something. I don't think you'd see it do it. And the unions don't allow it now anyway.
Right.
They step in and say you can't.
Remember, not so long ago, you guys will both correct me on this, but wouldn't the college all-star team play the Super Bowl winning team in an exhibition or the first or in the off season or some version of that? Wasn't there some version of that in the 70s?
I think that may have ended mid 60s. I'm not sure.
Was that even the Super Bowl era?
I think so. I don't know. Kalen, you can look it up. It was college all-stars playing the professional football team, but I think it was the Super Bowl winning. Maybe it was a championship. Super Bowl era is going back a ways now. You know, it used to be the Super Bowl era. Like, I used to be able to count the teams. I knew all the teams that won the Super Bowl. I knew what year, you know, they won. I could read the Roman numerals. I'm kind of lost now. There's been too many for me.
Well, we're coming up to 55. The Roman numerals are confusing.
Yes. Kalen, is there anything about that? Yeah, it existed, and I think it went into the Super Bowl era, which feels modern, but it's 55 years old.
It was Chicago Charities College All-Star Game, and it operated from 1934 to 1976.
And they would play the Super Bowl winner?
Yes. They played the NFL champions and then a team of star college seniors.
And
when did they play?
Yeah, what was the game? Kalen doesn't know football real well, so but it went.
It was in July, August, or September. It looks like
it was in training.
Okay. Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it wasn't
Okay.
Wouldn't have been a regular season game, but like, but still, the notion that could you imagine pitching that today? Like, hey, these plucky college all stars are going to go up against the Kansas City Chiefs in July.
No, I couldn't imagine that having any semblance of reality occurring at this instance.
Right.
You'd have two reserves on the college team who would actually play, because the rest of them would be jeopardizing their professional careers. So,
yeah, and nobody on the NFL side would be playing.
You'd have a couple of kickers.
Yeah.
Wow, good memory, Adam. I don't remember that. Don't recall that.
It's one of those things sort of like watching guys racing at Indianapolis in the 50s with like no roll bar on their car, where you're going, it was way after World War II. Like, we had a ball turret gunner and a B-28. We couldn't invent we didn't have a roll bar. No one wanted to put a piece of metal higher than your head in the car.
Isn't it astonishing, the technology today, where those whole things, you know, can just totally disintegrate and do a million rolls and catch on fire, and the guy gets up and walks away?
Yeah,
it is. It's funny that what they learned essentially was, don't put the driver in a vault. Essentially, you know, don't put them in some impenetrable fortress. Put the driver in something that'll absorb the impact. It'll crush, it'll break away, it'll pull apart. So all the technology is everything giving. It used to be like, make it as strong as you can. Now it's, oh no, it's got to give. So like, there was an accident in the Indianapolis 500 this year right at the end, where the guy just got loose and he hit the barrier, which is the one that leads into the pit entry. And normally that would have just been basically one wall going one way and the other one running next to it. And that would have just torn the car in half and killed the driver. And this time it had a huge pile of tires in front of it, which just gave, And then the driver's car collapsed as well. And that's the way to absorb the impact, not beefing up the driver's side or the racetrack side. Both sides have to give.
That's the good side of it. But now you see all these poor people, yourself, myself, some lady driving, you know, you hit a parking meter and it barely packs into it and the whole back of the car is crushed and it's $8,000 worth of damage and you wonder, what the heck happened here?
Yeah, it's all meant to just one big crush zone. And it's also F1 and Indy now have that bar that goes through the cockpit. They have that halo and that center bar looked like an old NFL birdcage type face mask, had that center bar going right down the middle of that. And as a matter of fact, you know, it took a while, but Ayrton Senna probably was killed because a piece of his own suspension came off and hit him in the head. And as a matter of fact, not to geek out too much in the automotive world, but now they have tie downs on the suspension. So meaning if you clip something and your whole left side strut, wishbone, and brake assembly just come off, it doesn't hit you in the head. It's got a tether on it. Hmm. It's tethered to the car. It can't fly off and hit you in the face. That's what killed Senna. Hmm.
It's like a transformer almost.
Yeah.
It can pull its arms and legs back in.
It just makes you wonder, driving with this bar directly in front of the window.
It's got to be distracting as heck. Yeah, how you know, just it's got to be very difficult just to figure out how to, you know.
It should, but John Riggins could flare out, catch a pass from Joe Theismann and take it down the sideline 80 yards with the same bar in front of his face. Why can't Lewis Hamilton do it?
You know, we'd eliminate concussions if we went back to the old thing that Sonny Jurgensen and Billy Kilmer, to pick a couple of the Washington football team Redskins at the time. You know, if you took just that bar that the old guys used to wear, George Blanda, you would not have these concussions because none of those guys want the cracked orbital bone, the broken noses, and it would take that helmet from being a weapon, and it would change the whole dynamic if you just went back to that, the technology of today with the helmet, but just the single bar, because, you know, it's probably not very safe because of the way that the guys hit each other now, but it would certainly end up not having the head-to-head collisions because, like I say, nobody who would be unprotected there would use their helmet as a weapon.
On either side of the ball, you're saying, there Correct. Would be a level of respect for
just be different.
The neck up. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's funny on two levels. One is helmets now, when you see them have those panels that give in them, they figured out with helmets, much like the barriers at the Indy 500, don't make them rock hard, have them have some give. So you can see all those kind of flex points in helmets now. So they're making the helmets. I have a helmet, a professional football helmet here. Actually, the wave of the future is kind of a soft shell, not soft and runny like a poached egg, but like you can put your thumb and kind of dent it. It's not a hard shell. It's not an M&M. It's kind of it has give to it. So if you want helmet to helmet, you'd have a little bit of that crumple zone. And then also back to Sonny Jurgensen and Theismann and the single bar back in the day. Remember at the very beginning before they really knew what to do? Guys had clear plexiglass. Do you remember that, Jeff?
Sure. Yeah.
That was also a weird thing, yeah. Which is you could see through this 3/4-inch band that was in the front of your mouth. All right, let me hit Bet Online here. Football is in full swing, people. NBA Finals, well, there's not much left. They probably got to get in this weekend or Friday even, right? That's right. Could be the last game, so get in on some of that. And you can get in on the action even if you can't go to the game at Bet Online this Sunday. Raiders at Chiefs should be a good game. Eagles at Steelers, Giants at Cowboys, Broncos at Patriots, Vikings at Seahawks, and Dolphins at 49ers. More options to wager than anywhere online, from spreads and totals to props. Get in on season opening bonuses and wager on division and championship futures. Head to Bet Online today. Take advantage of the all the great sign-up bonuses. Visit betonline.ag, our exclusive partner at Podcast One. And don't forget use the code Podcast One to sign up for your free bonus today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts, I should say. Jim, what is there a through line with the goats from all the different walks of life? Is there one personality trait they possess that you were able to sort of divine as a through line?
You know, I think they all have some of the same traits, and then they go about it differently. But I would just say, you know, hard work, dedication, total tunnel vision, wanting it more than anything else in life. Sometimes that takes guys to extremes. I have a chapter on perfection and what perfection has done and how it has affected. The three personalities that I used were the personalities who I covered the most closely and had relationships with. Don Shula, who I interviewed as a very young man, and then he became my partner on Westwood One Radio after he retired. Floyd Mayweather, who we covered on Showtime, and I work at Showtime doing all the fights in the ring and what the zero after his record meant to him while he was doing it, and now as he has gone on from boxing. And Michael Phelps, who became the most decorated Olympian in history with all of those gold medals and medals that he achieved, and what the pursuit of perfection has done for those goats, and how in some instances, it defines their lives. In those three, it has defined their lives, and how in, you know, other instances, it's tormented them. It caused Michael Phelps, who did a brilliant documentary on his life on HBO a couple of months ago, you know, just how tough it is to have gone through that. And we detail a lot of that in the book from my vantage point and from knowing him from going all the way back to his first race in the Olympics when before he ever won a medal in Sydney. He did not win any medals there, all the way up through Floyd Mayweather, how money became a sign of perfection to him. And that's what he wanted to be the goat of, and how he totally changed and revolutionized an entire industry and business, you know, generating $1 billion in a single evening, a couple of times with
Conor McGregor and Pacquiao.
Conor McGregor, yeah.
Well, to be fair to Floyd, his middle name is Money. It's Floyd Money Mayweather. I haven't checked his driver's license, but if in fact that's his if that's his Christian name, then you can't really blame the guy for one. He's following on his birthright at that point, Floyd Money Mayweather. Hey, Jeff, you got our Bet Online wrap?
I sure do. Let's check the Bet Online line from Bet Online Thursday Night Football Bulletin line move. Whew. The Bucs are now 3.5-point favorites over the Bears. They were 5.5-point favorites 2 days ago. So the soft helmet of betting lines is taking effect here. They're taking a thumb to the helmet here. Money line still on the Bucs, -190. Jump on that. That's tonight. NBA Lakers 7 points still. Game 5 favorites. There's 6 remaining undefeated teams in the NFL. Here's their odds to win the Super Bowl. Let me know if you think. Either of you, anybody's going to make a move here. Kansas City Chiefs +350, Seahawks +800, Packers +850, Bills +1400, Steelers +2200, and the Titans +3300. Who do you think is going to make a move out of that? A lot of big games coming up in the next week and a half.
I think the Seahawks. I'm so impressed with Russell Wilson and I like the Seahawks. They're in the Rams division. They scare me. They'll probably win the division. They'll play some games at home. Russell just comes through in crunch time, and the guy seems to get better every year. And they, they're unbeaten right now. And I know KC's sort of the darling, but KC looked pretty mortal last week, and I don't know. Seahawks with Russell Wilson. It's hard not to think they're a great franchise.
Yeah.
Jim, what do you think?
Buffalo. They got the Chiefs coming into Buffalo, I think, in next Thursday or something like that. They got a big game coming up. If they at home against KC, and if they make some hay there, whew, they could be hell to pay. They got a great D.
What do you think, Jim?
I, I kind of like what you said about Seattle, and I think they're the one team that even without the 12th man, which is so important to them, they have a big home field advantage if they can secure that, because there can be weather up there, and they're really used to that weather. They've played in it, and they, you know, they collectively know how to deal with those elements, and everybody else will not. So even without the fans, that's a home field advantage. Every place else, there really isn't a home field advantage anymore. But COVID has changed everything, Adam. I mean, we don't even know if the Chiefs are going to have a game this week against the Raiders, because the Raiders had one guy who is now tested positive, and they played against the Patriots. And then we got Stephon Gilmore now, who has tested positive. He was right up close to Patrick Mahomes, basically hugging him and talking, you know, extendedly for whatever it was, 20, 25 seconds after the game, you know, very close face mask to face mask. So I just think that anything that we think we know, and things change in the NFL in a hurry, but it's going to change a lot more this year because of the circumstance and the virus. So who's going to be standing up at the end of this year? I hear all of these odds, and it just makes me wonder, you know, those guys are so proficient at figuring this stuff out, and the computers and all of the stuff that they use, all the analytics, and they're really amazing. But there is no way that you can put into the analytics who is going to contract the virus from a son, a father, a supermarket clerk, whoever, and that can change everything. And then the protocols go into place. And if they're asymptomatic, they're out a certain time. But if they have the full blown symptoms, first of all, they have to recover as human beings. Forget about athletes. And the recovery period for anybody during this whole COVID thing is different. What may happen to you is different for what may happen to one of these players. So if we really think that we're going to be able to look at this and do this like we do, we don't even know when it's just a regular football season. There's upsets all the times. We think we know, and nobody really knows. But now we've got this in the equation. So I hear all those numbers, and I just don't know how anybody, you know, really thinks that they can analyze this because of everything that can come up. So I don't know if that made any sense, but it made a lot of sense in my head.
Well, it certainly rained on my Packers 4-0 start, but, you know, I'll get over that.
You know what I think? I think Seattle should do to claim back their 12th man advantage, which they're not going to have. It seems to me they have that hawk that just sails all the way down and lands on the Falconeer's forearm. You should tell opposing quarterbacks, we don't know where Francis the Hawk is. Ever since this whole pandemic thing, he's gone AWOL. But I will tell you this, he does haunt the upper deck of this stadium. And if you drop back and hold that ball too high, he will come. He will come. So if you're going to do a shuffle pass, fine. If you're going to hand the ball off, fine. But always be thinking in the back of your head not to hold that ball too high, too long, because Francis will come swooping down and he may have COVID. We don't know. He's not listening to his trainer anymore. He's off. He's AWOL as far as we can tell.
He's partying. He's becoming in contact with other birds.
He's hanging out with a group of ravens from the wrong side of the track.
When I was a little boy, I grew up in Denver, and my dad would take me from time to time to the Air Force Academy to watch the Falcons play. And they had the same semblance of a thing with a falcon.
Right.
And would fly around the stadium, and he would land on one of the cadets. And he took me 1 week, and I was just a little kid, and the bird flew off. He flew off into the Rocky Mountains, and he never came back. And so ever since then, I kind of figured, you know what? It was only a matter of time before that bird up there in Seattle, you know, because I was conditioned as a youngster to see, you know, there's no guarantee this guy's coming back. And no. Just flew and flew, and they got some other bird to replace him the next week or two. And they said he flew back, but we all knew that bird was off.
That's showbiz, baby, right there.
He left Colorado Springs, and he was in Empire or Steamboat Springs, or he was figured out someplace else to live. He was not coming back to that guy's arm.
All right, let's bring it home. The book, Talking to Goats, forward by Tom Brady, and that's coming out November 10th. And also, you can check out the Westwood One radio show, NFL Monday Night Football, and pregame halftime show each week with Tom and Larry Fitzgerald as well. We got an outro, Dawson?
All balls, all sports. Presented by Bet Online, your online sportsbook expert.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. And thanks, Jim. That was fun.
Adam, thank you. Appreciate you having me on. Look forward to coming back.
We'll do it again soon. All right. You can find me in Stockton, California, and that'll be this Monday at the Brookside Country Club. So go out there. And also Lafayette, Louisiana, coming up at the Cajun Dome Saturday, October 24th. Do two shows there as well. I'm your emotional support animal. You can enjoy that book on Amazon if you like. And until next time, Sam Kroll for Patty Smythe and Teresa Strasser and Jim Gray and Jeff Cesario and Ball Bryan saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Big thanks to Bet Online. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and pick up Adam's new book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. It's available everywhere. Get the links at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.